guest, Mary Griffith. She is the founder of Trial Consulting Enterprises, a Dallas-based trial sciences firm. And we want to talk about trial juries on this law day. Mary, thank you for joining us.
Yes, good morning.
So, you know, the juries, and we see that movie, I'm sure you're very familiar with it.
Right.
Is that kind of what it can be like in a jury room, especially in a capital type case where a life is at stake?
Absolutely. There's so many emotions and so many different belief systems that come into play when you have a group. That group mentality can just sort of take over, and it's not unusual for such heated arguments and discussions to occur.
And now we have a major trial going on right now that I've been covering in Waterloo, Illinois. It's a triple murder trial, a man accused of murdering his wife and two young sons. And, you know, the first week, it's all been the prosecution presenting its case. So all the evidence you're hearing, minus, of course, the cross-examination, is very strong sounding and appears to be, you know, it's like, oh, he had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, isn't it important for the jury to take its time, to be patient, as the judge and the attorneys told them, to make sure they hear the whole story before really making that decision? And how tough is that for a jury to do?
It is very tough. You know, the judge will always instruct the jury that there's always two sides to every story. And I think every parent out there can understand, if they have children, you know, that the one child may say one thing, another child may say the other. So it's really, really important to weigh both sides. But what happens is that there's a lot of jury research out there that opening statements can really affect a juror's mindset about the case, because they kind of want to figure out a case pretty quickly. And so they'll come to a conclusion and then look for facts that sort of associate with the conclusion that they're starting to form.
And Mary, since we're dealing with human beings here, and I guess this is where your research and what you do comes in, I mean, how do you really change that? You can't control that. People are human beings.
Right. You know, the biggest thing that we always try to tell, and judges are really good about doing this, is that just saying, look, all of the evidence that you're about to hear hasn't gotten in yet. So in order to really fully make up your mind, you have to hear all of the evidence that's going to be presented in this case. And when you tell jurors the why it's so important to listen to everything, they at least try to do that. They try to reach that objective. But it is so tough to get someone to be entrenched, if you will, once the, you know, prosecution, or once there's been a really strong opening statement made by either party.
Also, I've noticed covering this trial a couple of theatrics, I guess you could say. One of them was the prosecution making sure that there was a portrait-sized picture of the wife and two sons displayed in front of the jury, and they left it up there basically until the defense said, can we take that down? And then the defense at one point, in cross-examining a pathologist who determined the time of death, which is a very important part of this case,
mm-hmm.
pointed out that that pathologist also testified for the defense in the O.J. Simpson trial. How effective are things like that?
You know, what we always tell our clients, and it's true, that trials are a very good form of live theater, in the sense that the jury in the box, they don't get to raise their hand and they don't get to ask questions. All they can do is just sit, watch, and observe and listen. And so a lot of times these tactics, these theatrical tactics, are done, and they can be done very effectively, because jurors are trying to get an understanding of who did what to who and why did they do it. As far as the OJ part of this, you know, that brings in another element that sometimes these expert witnesses who have done really high-profile cases, it can work for the party who brings them, because then at least it establishes that this witness is world-renowned, etc. But if the case in which they're world-renowned has some controversy to it, you may have brought controversy into a trial that really had nothing to do with your case.
Mary, there's a lot of reluctance with people that want or do not want to serve on a jury. How does that affect anything when you get them in there and now you're presented with this case? How do you work around that?
Well, you know, getting a jury summons is about as exciting as going to a dentist. I think a lot of people realize that in the court system, is that so many people try to get out. With the recession and with a lot of the jury pool dwindling down, because a lot of people do have viable economic hardship reasons for why they cannot serve, We've seen sort of a trend that sometimes judges are becoming a little bit stricter about what they will allow because panels have become so small that trials cannot take place because there's not enough jurors to choose from to get a panel seated. So it's, although we all kind of don't like it, we still need to realize that serving on a jury truly is a privilege. It's a privilege that this country is, we're known for this, and it's really an honor to do it.
And it's nice to talk with you, Mary Griffiths. Very interesting topic, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Great. Thank you so much.